Every now and then, an extraordinary person appears on a scene and sets an example for all of the rest of us. That person is our speaker this afternoon, Elizabeth Edwards, wife of former presidential candidate John Edwards. Mrs. Edwards has participated in this presidential campaign and the one in 2004 and the senatorial campaign before that. So she's quite seasoned in the ways that campaigns work and how nasty that they can be and the rigors that a candidate's wife and the candidate has to go through in order to assume elective office in our country. She has also confronted every parent's worst nightmare, the death of a child. She has also confronted every woman's worst nightmare, a lump on her breast. And she has confronted this crazy healthcare system that all of us write about and curse from time to time as a patient. And I'm sure she's going to be able to tell us a great deal about what that experience is like in America. She has traveled the country talking to countless people about their problems with the healthcare system, their problems putting food on the table, and her interest in people and their financial aspects and the poverty that she has found are stories that all of us should hear and listen to. She will be talking about those experiences this afternoon. Mrs. Edwards also has a very impressive background. She is a lawyer by training, and she went to law school at the University of North Carolina, graduating in 1977. She married John Edwards right after the two of them took their bar exams. So that's a very interesting kind of connection. She has also clerked for a federal judge, worked in private practice for many years, and was working for the Attorney General of North Carolina when the family lived there, or family moved there from Tennessee. After her son Wade died in a car accident, she retired from law practice and has devoted her time to administering the Wade Edwards Foundation. She has also taught legal writing at UNC Law School and worked as a substitute teacher. And at lunch, I also learned that she has homeschooled her children during the campaign, so she might be able to share some of those challenges and joys with us today. During the 2004 presidential race, Mrs. Edwards was with her husband during the campaign, and it was during that campaign in Wisconsin that she discovered the lump in her breast that was subsequently to change her life. She was treated, and all of us do remember that day after the election when this was revealed, and we were all rather shaken by that news. During the recent campaign, Mrs. Edwards announced that her cancer had returned and that she would continue campaigning with her husband, which she did. And it was always fun to look at all those press stories because she always had the best quotes. And they were really fun to read. They were always interspersed with the rest of the rather turgid campaign coverage. She was often one of the most outspoken people on the campaign for her forthrightness and what she had to say. She never really minced words about any of the issues on the campaign. In fact, when she was asked about gay marriage, which was sort of a taboo, and I guess she disagreed with Mr. Edwards on this talk, and you know what the anti-gay marriage people do with such information, she said, "I don't know why someone else's marriage has anything to do with me. I'm completely comfortable with gay marriage." And with that, I present Elizabeth Edwards.
Thank you. You notice those of us who are short use the steps at the end. It was those, loved all the tall people who just stepped up onto the stage. I want to start first by thanking you for an entirely too gracious introduction, and also to say what I often, I just wait for the first question, but I'll go ahead and beat you to it. I'm actually doing really well. I got great treatment from one of your hosts here in Lombardy. I noticed when I was looking at the schedule online how many people from Lombardy were over here, and I got great treatment there and continue to get it at the at UNC hospitals now. I get checked periodically with a whole range of tests, and those tests have the cancer's still here, but you know, it seems to be under control. And aside from not liking the medication very much, and my deductible going up on my copay going up on it recently, because the FDA didn't approve it for the use that everybody actually uses it for, I have no complaints. Except these. I was very impressed, as I said, I'm not going to be here for this session to listen to people speak. But as you were running through the awards, I kept thinking, gee, I'd like to read that, and I'd like to read that. And one of my complaints that I talk about here is making certain that people understand the difference between the candidates on healthcare policy, because obviously you all think, and I certainly think, that it matters. And one of the things was the National Journal article that the judges determined really laid this out in such a way. But, of course, the National Journal is not read by most of the country. So that we still are in the dark in a lot of ways. The country's in the dark in a lot of ways. But I was hoping, so I said, where's the booklet with all those articles in it? Because I sure would love to read every one of them. And I congratulate each one of you for your work, your important work. John McCain and I have something in common, and that is that neither one of us would be covered under his health care policy. The same is true of most of you in the room. Now, I'm known, as the introduction said, I will sometimes do an incredibly cumbersome sentence in order to make certain that I'm absolutely truthful. Because you know, and journalists know this better than anybody else, that every time you try to, they tell you you really need to take out, you know, 75 words or 100 words or something. Every time you refine it a little bit, you move a little further away from the truth. So in order to be completely truthful, it is true that John McCain and I both have financial conditions, and our financial condition, that we could probably afford the cost of the health care policy that would be available to people in our physical conditions in the event that his policy became law. I wrote this and no idea, but of course I'm not paying attention to this. I have no idea where I am in it. That is, of course, if the insurers were willing to write the policies, but they wouldn't have to under Senator McCain's policy. They wouldn't have to cover pre-existing conditions like breast cancer or melanoma. They would have the choice of not covering them. But do you think the public knows this? I mean, do you think the public has any idea about this? As I went around the country, one of the things that I heard most was the problems associated with pre-existing conditions. Because, honestly, a lot of people who are uninsured are not attending a lot of the events, certainly not the events where somebody's spouse is answering questions. I talked more to people who actually had insurance but were finding that their problems were associated with it's not being covered under their policy. The coverage of pre-existing conditions is enormously important in real life to people. I don't think people understand that pre-existing conditions would probably not be covered under his policies. The most radical changes that are proposed in the 2008 election are being proposed by, sort of drum roll, the conservative. His website says, nothing short of a complete reform of the culture of our health system and the way we pay for it will suffice. And if you start examining what really happens under these flowery words and his policy, I think that you can discover that. But I don't think the public knows that. And why is it? Part of the problem is politicians speak. We don't try necessarily to make ourselves entirely clear. On some things, we really actually try to be obscure. Ask politicians about Medicare, and you'll get such muddied answers because nobody really has an answer. So instead what they do is give you some platitude and some assurances and language about perhaps their other health care policy that maybe that you get the impression apply to Medicare, but nobody really has answers, so nobody talks about it or they talk about it in a way that's unclear, and the American public is not informed until you tell them, because frankly my telling them doesn't help, but you're telling them that nobody is addressing this issue in a meaningful way. I'll talk later about an October speech that October 2007 speech that John McCain gave in Des Moines. And one of the, he said a series of questions, don't we need to do this and don't we need to do that and don't we need to tell the truth about Medicare? And then he doesn't. You know, but that's, I don't want to say it's isolated to him. I blame everybody in the race, and that includes my own husband, you know, in terms of not being, not wanting to address something that is like slogging through mud, because you're not offering people an answer because we're in a difficult situation with respect to it. I'm not entirely pessimistic about it. I think if we do the right things, we have a capacity to both to reduce the cost associated with Medicare and to reduce the demand for services under Medicare if we really have aggressive preventive and screening programs earlier. So maybe 25 years from now, when my oldest daughter is starting to think about Medicare, it'll be in better shape than it is now. But that's only if we do the right things now. It's nothing that's going to turn around on a dime. In America, we're the fast food nation. Basically, we don't want to pull forward for our French fries. We sure don't want to wait for a fix on Medicare. You know, can we have that done? So I have no idea where I am. I want to be clear. I do have an agenda here as I speak. And one of the reasons I wanted to say yes is I think this is enormously important, and I don't think, you know, because we don't all have access to, you know, to some of the fine pieces that were just awarded awards earlier. I don't think we're informed about healthcare. And I was talking earlier in the 2004 campaign. I bet if you asked people who were in the campaigns, the Bush campaigns and the Kerry campaigns, what are the differences in the health care policies of these two men? They could not tell you. They couldn't tell you. Partly because of politicians speak, and you know, they didn't have actual answers that would solve some of people's real problems, so it was better to give some sort of platitude that people would imagine covered them, even if it wasn't really intended to, and because it wasn't interesting enough to cover in a way that was clear to the American public. You're given, I know, like, you know, 75 pieces out of a 500-piece puzzle and asked to put the picture together for the American people, it's pretty tough. But honestly, my agenda is to encourage you to do just that. I want you to pick apart the Hallmark card descriptions of the remedies of the candidates. And I want you to call the candidates when they have bloated descriptions or praise for their own, the results that they're going to have, and also for false attacks that they make on other policies. Other candidates doing it is just going to seem like sniping. You have to do it. It has to come. The word choices that are made. I mean, you know, I'm a junkie of this stuff, and as I watch very carefully as at the words people choose to use that send messages to the listeners. Maybe the only message on which they rely about what these particular policies mean, not just on healthcare, but on a variety of things. I want you to make the American voting public more informed about the choices that they're going to make on what they've already said is one of the most important decisions, issues that face the country in 2008. I spent several months on the campaign critiquing the healthcare plans of the other Democrats. I know none of you were actually there, but don't feel too bad. The press didn't actually cover me that much. But I spent very little time talking about Republican plans. And now we actually have a Republican that we know is going to be the nominee. So today I want to talk a little bit about Senator McCain's plans and why it is this is the wrong direction for the country, and why it is it's hard for people to understand what's wrong with it in real ways. The website has this language. Families should be able to purchase health insurance nationwide, across state lines, to maximize their choices and heighten competition for their business that will eliminate excess overhead, administrative, and excess compensation costs from the system. Sounds good, right? I mean, eliminate excessive costs, who's against that? Anybody in the room against eliminating excessive costs? Of course not. And never mind that it's a little unclear what those costs would be and what's being eliminated, but being able to purchase insurance nationwide, well, that seems like a great idea. I mean, Blue Cross does business nationwide, don't they? So why is this even a problem? So really what he's talking about is eliminating all these extra costs that are driving our health costs up, the cost of our insurance. But, of course, that there is no rational connection between what he's suggesting, which is allowing a health insurance company in Texas to sell a health policy in Virginia with what he's talking about. And what the takeaway is from the reader on that. I'm going to use the word of the printed version of the speech he gave in Des Moines. He gave this healthcare speech in Des Moines. And it's on his website. You can read it. It's sort of the outline of what he's going to do. And then he gave a written speech, which you can also, gave the speech, passed the speech out to you guys, and then gave the speech, and they actually have the video. It's the classic comics version of the printed speech that was handed out. I started taking notes on it, and there was no point. But in the printed version, he talks about wringing out the bloated executive compensation. Well, is there an American who's not against bloated, except the executives, against bloated executive compensation? But it's not just that wringing out of bloated executive compensation is completely and totally unrelated to the policies proposing here. It dangerously masks a truly disastrous policy proposal. Or as we say in the South, it's like putting lipstick on a pig. John McCain proposes allowing health insurance to sell across state lines. Now, why is this important? People think it's already happening. It's not, but people think that that's happening. It's because insurance is regulated state by state. And in some places, it's regulated stringently. And in some places, it's regulated laxly. I'd rather buy a policy in North Carolina than in Texas. I would much rather buy a policy in North Carolina than in Texas. An insurer, on the other hand, would rather sell a policy where he's controlled by Texas law. Hard-fought state-by-state consumer protections would be lost in what would inevitably be a rush to Texas or one of the half-dozen states where the insurance companies believe or their lawyers advise them that they will be less regulated and or that they will get better treatment in the courts. If you think I'm wrong about this inevitability, why are there so many corporations home-based in the state of Delaware? It's because Delaware has the most accommodating laws for corporations, the best judicial treatment for them, and so they're home based there. You might be watching the commercials or they're listening on the radio to the commercials for Nevada now. Nevada is trying to compete for this, and you hear some truly loathsome television and radio commercials where they're promising you move your corporation here and you're free from this liability and you can get this special kind of treatment. That's exactly what's going to happen with insurance companies. There's another example of it's happening in a different context. Undoubtedly, everybody in the room has a credit card, or at least one. What you may not realize is that if you have a dispute about that credit card or if you're delayed about that credit card, that those are going to be subject to the laws of Delaware again, or perhaps South Dakota, where they get more, they're able to punch you up on your delinquent interest rate to very high limits. That's what corporate lawyers do. They tell them where is the most accommodating location for you. And if you don't think it's going to happen with respect to health insurance companies, of course it is. And so do they want this to happen? Do they want this proposal that McCain's offering? Absolutely they want it. Do you think for a single instant that the reason they want it is so they can get out from the yoke of those bloated executive compensation things? Or is it the oppressive consumer protections and rate controls that exist in more progressive states? Well, we all know what the truth is here. And don't you think that John McCain, or at least his policy advisors, know precisely the same thing? And that they mask this proposal under this guise that this is some cost-saving technique for most Americans? I think that he's trying, in this instance, to give insurance companies a pass on state regulation. And I want to say in a parenthetical, in that October speech, he said almost as much, or at least the printed version. He didn't say it in the version he actually delivered. He calls for greater competition among insurers on a level playing field, that being the national playing field without those nasty regulators in the more aggressive states. You should be able to buy your insurance from any willing provider. And then his parenthetical, state bureaucracies are no better than national ones. Well, he knows what the insurance companies know. And the problem is that the voter in North Carolina doesn't know that. They don't know anything about Texas insurance law and how stringent they are, just like they knew nothing about South Dakota usury law. And so all they hear is that bureaucracies will be skirted and bloated executive salaries will be wrung out. Someone has to translate for them that Hallmark card into real terms and what it's going to make, difference it's going to make in their lives. Now, again, I want to be honest. Insurance companies will eliminate the cost of trying to meet the regulations in nasty states like North Carolina, and because that department and its consumer-oriented regulations will be, for them, irrelevant. But if that's what Senator McCain is talking about in cost-cutting, shouldn't someone make him say that? Again, to be honest, one of the awards went to the Wall Street Journal reporter who had written about this. Laura Meckler had written about his policy, his speech when he gave it. They did mention at the close of that article something along the lines of this. But the implication of what was said in the article was that this policy. This program would create a policy, a health insurance policy that was cheaper, and the cheaper was better, even if it didn't cover the same benefits that some states have determined were essential. And this is what the article said. Mr. McCain would also allow people to buy insurance across state lines, a policy that could help someone in a state with many mandated benefits. Those mandated benefits would be things like covering pre-existing conditions or requiring certain screenings. Those mandated benefits that increase the cost of insurance policies. So instead, we can buy, and I think one of the award winners at the end was talking about those the bare bones policies with the high deductibles that where people finding out that this is a morass that they cannot work their way through in terms of either evaluating the different policies or about getting the coverage they need once they're in one of those policies. I think the state of New Hampshire had a whole series of those policies under the previous Governor Benson, and those were that entire program was eliminated because in practical terms it didn't work for people who had, they might be able to buy an insurance policy for $3,000, but then they found out that they had $8,000 in deductible before their $3,000 policy started to kick in. So in fact they had an $11,000 policy. She didn't fall for the notion that the reason, of course, for the for this change was that it was cheaper because of it was getting rid of those bloated executive salaries, but that because it was getting rid of those mandated benefits that were covered. But that needs to be a headline, doesn't it, for people? They need to understand what's going to actually happen in their real lives. I don't think there was, I don't think you need a patient anecdote for each one of these things, but it needs to be said in a way that's clear, that makes people understand the consequences of these policies. Because the politicians have no interest in telling you the consequences of the real policies, just like they have very little interest in telling you the cost of the real policies. Senator McCain and I have something else in common. We're both Navy juniors. Our fathers were both in the Navy, career Navy officers. I was born on the Naval Air Station in Jacksonville, Florida, courtesy of the Navy doctors. He was born on base in the Canal Zone, same story. We got our tetanus shots from Navy corpsmen and our cavities filled by Navy dentists. John McCain left the protections of the Navy health system afforded by his father's service to the protection afforded by his own distinguished service at the Naval Academy first and then on active duty. And that was followed by the protections of the VA and the services that he was rendered there, the great services at the time, and then the care of the Federal Employees Health Benefit Plan. He qualifies now for Medicare. John McCain has not spent a single day of his life on which he was not covered by a government or eligible for some form of government-provided insurance. And yet, he regularly denounces government-run health care programs, alluding incorrectly to Democratic candidates as if they were, and programs as if they were all based on the Canadian model. He said he doesn't think government-run programs such as those in Canada and in Europe, and may I add also, parenthetically, the United States military, can succeed. I think it's warmed over proposal that we rejected back in the 1990s, and I'm certainly not interested in raising people's taxes. Now, that's a quote from John McCain. You put that line in the same basket with bloated executive salaries and inefficient bureaucracy, state bureaucracies. The basket can be labeled irrelevant but pandering diversions. What is McCain diverting us from? I think he's diverting us from universality, also a word that's grossly misused by candidates. People like to think everyone's going to be covered. Well, they really mostly care whether they're covered, but they'd like to think that there's a protection of coverage, but that protection is only available to everybody if you have an actual universal program. Senator McCain does not. Senator Obama does not have universal programs. They don't have universal programs. Now, I do agree with John McCain and with John Edwards, I have to say, and I do have to say one word on behalf of my husband. He was the first of the people in this campaign to address this issue, both in terms of cutting costs associated with health care and with a universal program, with the exception, again, to be honest, of Dennis Kucinich, who I think was born with his universal health care plan in his hand, single-payer plan in his hand. He's lived in the car for a while, universal health care plan still in his hand. Health care in this country is too expensive. Everybody knows this, and we have to find ways to bring the cost of health care down. And I would say, as a personal aside, you know, talking about the personal stories, the cost of health care is just a part of the cost that patients actually incur associated with health care. During my treatment, I would see people who either brought their kids with them to chemotherapy or had to figure out a way to pay for a babysitter while they got chemotherapy. Radiation, even more complicated, though the time was much shorter for the radiation, it was still every single day. And every single day you had to make an arrangement for your children. I see people who came first thing in the morning so that they could get to work on time after treatments. People who had transportation issues. Even simple things. I chose to get in D.C. I chose to get my radiation at Sibley because you could actually park at Sibley. So simple things like that. And I had a car. If I didn't have a car, imagine how much more complicated it was going to be for me to get, and how much more time it was going to take out of my day in order to get the treatment that I need. There are auxiliary funds that help pay for these things, but the cost of health care, in terms of the cost of paying our providers, is only a portion of the actual cost associated to the patient with having a debilitating disease. But it's clear that we have to bring the cost of that provider care down. Many of the ideas, every single one of these candidates has endorsed. Wildly popular ideas, you know, which people, every one of them, my husband included, and I don't want to make him sound like he's a saint on this, all agree, but they're wildly popular, and so, you know, it's not exactly an act of courage to agree. The reimportation of prescription drugs from Canada. There's no logical reason why the U.S. consumer should bankroll pharmaceutical drugs for the entire rest of the planet, and yet we do. The word reimportation is really about all you need to know about whether the reimportation of drugs ought to be permitted, isn't it? I mean, the determination of whether something can be safely accomplished when you use the word reimportation kind of answers the question for you. But they're all in favor of that. Or some that are less well known, but when there are known, are widely applauded. Common sense ideas like expanded telemedicine or patent reform. I applaud Senator McCain, who was, I think, a leader with respect to the extension of patents on pharmaceuticals and the bogus reasons that they have been extended in the past. Certainly the development of generics. And with the idea of the federal government negotiating the price of drugs under Part D of Medicare. I mean, there's no difference between the candidates here. But that's what they want to talk about. And that's what confuses the American public. They just say, well, you know, Bush and Kerry, they're exactly the same on health care. It's because they talk about these things, which are wildly popular, instead of talking about the edgier things. And so the edgier things that, that on which they frankly all agree, but maybe are a little edgier. They mention, but they don't even focus so much on those. And one of them would be, of course, the cost saving, and I have to add medical error reducing idea of electronic record keeping, which I think they all endorse, which does raise eyebrows in liberal and some liberal quarters, and in nearly every libertarian or Republican / libertarian quarter. But they're all in favor of those cost-saving things. Real cost-saving comes, though. The only real cost-saving comes when you're talking about universality. You have to be certain that you don't have the continued cost-shifting. In North Carolina, and I know there's some North Carolina people, I'm supposed to get a thumbs up or a thumbs down. About thumbs down. Is it over? No, halftime. Okay. Down by 10. Carolina women are playing Louisville. Sorry. we can make that up. But at Chapel Hill, somebody who's who worked for the hospital was actually in the hospital at UNC, and it's a public hospital, and the new head of the hospital gets a big bonus if they save a lot of money. So they quit donating to the Ronald McDonald House, speaking of the costs, other costs associated with patient care in the way that they had been, and they did other cost savings. I did use the speech that I gave where he was present to lambast diminishing of adjunct services to patients. A man is suing over his bill. He was charged while he was in the hospital $50 for a bottle of water. Now, why? Obviously, the hospital's not costing anything close to that. It's cost shifting. And until we get rid of the need for hospitals and other providers to cover the costs of people who are not getting insurance, not covered by a government program, are not able to pay themselves, you're going to have cost shifting, and the prices are not going to, the cost, overall cost is not going to go down. Universality is the, if that's all we did, we would see a reduction in overall costs. If that's all it per patient, it's really important that we make the commitment to do that. And so all of these other things that he's talking about, they're nice, but they're window dressing, honestly. We need to move in this direction. And it's not a question of government intervention. It's a question of making it cheaper for each one of us. The cost of our health insurance right now, I think there's going to be updated surveys, but the most recent number that I know, $922 more is what it costs you on your health insurance because your next door neighbor doesn't have any. $922 is a lot of money. And that number is actually going, is on a path to go up. The projections are that it goes up and up pretty steeply in the coming years. So we need, obviously, we need to have that. And that's not a part of his program, and not a part of every Democrat's program either. I want to be clear about that. I don't want to be accused of just lambasting Democrats here. I think this is a direction that's really important that we need to go. I think that John McCain also says the additional answer for reducing cost is that we can all shop for cheaper providers who have good results. What we all need is just we need to find that cheap doctor who has good results. And for those cheaper insurance policies that don't have all those expensive mandated benefits, like covering pre-existing conditions or getting regular screenings or wellness programs. Now, the wellness program is a little bit of a problem for him because one of the ways he says that we save on health care is we just don't get as sick. We need to take responsibility for ourselves. There's nobody who really disagrees with this. We do need to take responsibility for ourselves. We were talking earlier, though, that it's really hard for some people to do those things because a lot of things that are within your power to do have to do with exercise. Yes, we could all probably exercise, although there are people who are so extraordinarily busy that even the amount of time that they would devote to themselves in that respect is probably difficult to achieve. We all need to have better nutrition. We need to avoid obesity. All of those things are huge contributors to our health care problems. But if you lived in some sections of Anacostia and you were in D.C. and you were had no vehicle and you could, if you had the time, you could take the bus someplace for your groceries and get back, but you're more likely to be able to have the time to walk down to your corner store, what do you expect to see on the shelves? Do you expect to see processed foods or do you expect to see vegetables? The truth is you're going to see processed foods for a number of reasons. One is there's a greater markup on them. And the other is they don't go bad. So it's in their interest to have highly processed foods, lots of carbohydrates, cheaper. That's a cheaper way to feed your children carbohydrates instead of feeding them fresh vegetables. It's going to be cheaper by the pound, cheaper by the meal. And so it's wrong to say we all have responsibility for it, we all need to do it, and therefore, you know, we don't need to worry about people who are not taking care of themselves. Some people are simply not in a condition. When I was in high school, and I went to my senior high school here in the D.C. area. There's an article in the Washington Post about this couple who was complaining about people who weren't able to eat right and said it was too expensive. And they said what they did was they took their newspapers and they took their magazines, they clipped the coupons from them, and they went to the stores that had good bargains and they bought things using these coupons, which is fine if you happen to have the car and if you happen to subscribe to 7 or 8 magazines and you get the daily newspaper. You know, then, you know, or at least the Wednesday newspaper, isn't that the one with all the coupons in it? If you can do all those things and shop selectively, you have that option. You know, it was completely fallacious complaint that the rest of people in the Washington area who weren't eating correctly simply weren't exercising the really good practices that they, and I think John McCain, think we all should be doing. So we shouldn't get sick in the first place. Now, of course, there's large political agreement about nutrition and obesity and exercise, but the answer is not just as simple as it's your responsibility. It's a lot more complicated than that. It's really important, though, for people to understand that these policies have to be turned into, that these policies have real stories associated with them, maybe stories that haven't yet been written or played out in people's lives. Check it and make sure it's not your kids. Right now, the public's left with a stack of Hallmark cards and not enough time to find find that cheap, effective doctor, and much less time to wade through obscure political speak to try to figure out what really happens under these different candidates' policies. And so they're left as we were in 2004, with people not understanding there was any difference whatsoever. The real story with a President John McCain. Here's what we have. We have a 60-year-old man, 60-plus-year-old man, with a history of melanoma who might not be able to buy an insurance policy. He can buy one, but one that excludes melanoma. And we have a daughter, like mine, with a mother who has breast cancer, who should take responsibility for her own monthly self-exams, but her health insurance policy is unlikely to provide her with the early kind of mammogram screening that she's going to need. A boy with childhood diabetes can expect that when he's no longer covered under his parents' policy, he will not be able to buy a policy himself that covers that condition or the side effects associated with that condition. And if his parents couldn't manage to provide a policy when he was younger, he'd better not count on SCHIP with the president, John McCain, because although he expresses in his website and everything else lots of support for it, he was one of that minority of people who voted to support the president's veto on the expansion of SCHIP, the fuzzy language aside. We can expect a woman who was diagnosed with a brain tumor to a better hope that she disclosed those headaches that she had 15 years ago when she first got that insurance policy, that health insurance policy, because her health insurance policy may now be covered by state law that allows rescission, even for an omission that seemed inconsequential at the time because she didn't know about her pre-existing. She didn't know about the brain tumor that she met 15 years before, because there's no limit on the look-back time. That's true in a number of states in this country. They can go back, look at your applications. Did you completely describe your condition? Even if you didn't know about the pre-existing condition, they can rescind or fail to cover the condition if it was pre-existing at the time. Now, the question is, how do you know? Well, maybe you take them to court, and then are you required to prove the negative? I bet there's going to be states that say you do. And if there is, I bet that's where these policies are going to be written. There are real consequences to the differences between the candidates, and there is no way for the regular voter to work this out in their heads. Even honestly, it's not that easy for me. And this is what I do with, you know, I talk about healthcare. I have to say I have some trepidation about talking always. I was in Colorado one time in 2004, and I got the first question on grazing. And I thought, looked around, I thought, shoot, everybody in this room knows everything there is to do about grazing, and I don't know a darn thing. Now, I know a little bit, but in some sense, it's almost more difficult. I know a little bit, and you all are likely to know lots, lots more, so I don't say there's a hesitation. But the truth is that all of this is not just the rhetoric of somebody speaking. This is not a fairy tale or even a speech. This is real life with real life consequences for people if these policies are put in effect. Now, I say that if with some because obviously what they talk about and what happens, there's a big gulf between it, but you can just bet we're not going to get anything better than what they're talking about. They have to at least be talking about the very best things, and maybe we can get something reasonably close to that. Real life that I've lived with a devastating disease, and I've had the very best medical care. All the while I've had it, I've been talking to lots of Americans who don't. They have the same condition I have, face the same hurdles I have, but without the insurance coverage to assure them of that best care, and often without any care at all. If the costs move higher, those women or the coverage is reduced, those women who look to us and look to leaders in this country in the time of their desperate need will once again stand alone. It's not who we are, I don't think. Not who we like to think we are. It's who we actually are, though. And we need to shine a really bright light on that. We don't need to let those people for whom bad luck or genetics or misfortune has tapped stand alone. Shouldn't they know the personal consequences to them of their vote, both of their importance of their actually voting and the consequences of the choices that they make? You are the way they get that information. You are the best, the most reliable source for them on making those decisions. And the onus, I can't put this say this too strong, the onus is on you to make certain that they make that decision. We don't end up speaking in 2012 about, gee, if we just known in 2008 what the differences were. That's your responsibility. My responsibility is just to urge you to do it. Now, I'll answer any questions that I can answer in whatever time they tell me before they tell me to stop. And if I didn't tell too many personal anecdotes. If you want to hear those, you're welcome to. But thank you very much. Microphone? Okay. Good.
This is Ron Lynn from the LA Times. You've made your statements about McCain pretty clear and his health plan. And you mentioned that Obama's plan does not include universality. So does that mean you prefer Clinton's plan? And also, who do you think should be the next president of the United States?
Okay. John Edwards should be the next president of the United States. I prefer Senator Clinton's plan of these three plans. Senator Clinton's plan is essentially the same thing as John's plan, with a few differences. She provides some tax credits, not as large as the tax credits that Senator Obama says are going to pay for those cheap policies that you have that we're all going to be out there buying. But she does provide tax credits, which John did not do. She does something with taxes, a tax that rolls. She rolls the taxes. Tax cuts from 2001 back less stringently. It goes to 200, rolls the tax breaks back on people made $250,000 and more, not $200,000 and more, which John did. So I slightly prefer John's because the way she makes up for the difference has to do with how you apply the savings of the prescription drug, the fixing of the negotiated prices under Part D. Of prescription drugs. So I prefer John's plan above hers, but hers plan being very close to John's plan, I think is by far by some considerable distance, the best of the health care plans. Yes.
Hi. Brian Thompson with Kansas Public Radio.
Yes.
We had a gentleman here yesterday from, I believe, the American Enterprise Institute, whose, I guess the core of his argument was that we all need to stop expecting someone else to pay for our health care. And so would you please break down the logic of that whole argument?
Well, our personal health care will cost us less and be more effectively provided if we have universal care. I mean, that $922 that we're presently paying under a system that I suspect the fellow from the American Enterprise Institute thinks is just dandy, we are currently paying the cost of somebody else's health care. We're doing it today. What we want to do is to reform it so that when we are all collectively insured and some of our tax dollars are used to support people's who can't otherwise afford their policies, we're sharing in it in a way that, in addition, creates cost efficiencies. Right now, we're doing it in a way that creates no cost efficiencies. It only, as a matter of fact, it actually adds to the upward pressure of costs. So, unless we're going to be truly libertarian and everybody's on their own, we're going to have some community of interest. And I think that we have a community of interest in saying we are better off as a country, more productive as a country if we're able to get the kind of medical treatment in a timely way, if we have the preventive care that we need, so that we're healthier in general. We're talking about when you talk about the cost of health care, it's impossible to not, you know, there's so many of these things that are linked to one another. The cost of uncovered illness in the workplace, the cost of illness in the workplace is $220 billion, something like that. The cost of uncovered is $120 billion. And I could be wrong about the consonant that begins that. It's not million, but it could be more, you know, it's some huge number, but it's like that. But we're talking about something, you know, almost twice as much it costs us in the workplace. So there are real consequences to having people who aren't covered by health insurance, and all we're doing is we're letting those inefficiencies happen, but we're not applying our dollars, whether it's in the workplace or in our tax dollars or in our insurance dollars, in a way that will decrease the cost overall. I do have to say that if we do this, a really aggressive kind of universality, where we really have the kind of screening that we need and the kind of preventive care that we need, we will, in fact, lower the cost of our care generally, and increase the quality of our lives. And I'll give you a personal example of this. My mother has osteoporosis. Not a big surprise. My grandmother had osteoporosis. She was bent over like the letter C. You know, it was not a big surprise to everybody. So my mother got tested, very low bone density. But she was a military wife. She could get that kind of testing. And she got the testing, discovered that she had osteoporosis herself. She takes a pill for the osteoporosis. Now, she's got a lot of other health issues as she's, you know, 84 years old, but but osteoporosis is not one of them, and the debilitating effects associated with it are not one of them. She's able to physically care for herself, which is possible she would not be able to do if she hadn't gotten that early screening. In addition, my father had a stroke in 1990, and my mother was able to care for him. The cost of that screening was borne by all of the taxpayers because it was paid for by the federal government. But look at what it brought us. My father didn't require home health care because he had a health care provider for a very long time my mother was able to care for him. And the excessive cares associated with the debilitating effects of osteoporosis were completely avoided. So, you know, we're not only the fast food nation, we have an entire economic, you know, you don't want me to get started on this, we have an entire economic system that is entirely short-term based. I mean, I think it's one of the reasons we have the housing crisis we have now. I mean, we're only looking at what happens the next month, the next 3 months. What happens in the next quarterly report? You know, we need to make certain that's okay. What happens 4 quarterly reports from now? Not quite as important. And so we gear everything towards this immediate. We need to have a longer range. And talking about preventive care, we're really talking about getting some of those returns really quickly. In 5 years, you start to see something. But by 25 years, we have completely changed the health picture in the country. You know, do we eradicate everything? No. But a lot of these preventable diseases or diseases for which we already have treatments, we are able to intervene in a way that makes it a lot less costly. And if the intervention is paid for by the federal government, aren't we all better? I mean, and paid by, therefore, by all of us, aren't we better off in the long run by making those interventions? I think it's very, very short-sighted and ignores the realities of what's happening right today, which is that we are, in fact, all paying today under the system that he probably loves. Yes.
Hi, Susan Mandel, People Magazine.
Yes.
What lessons do you hope your children draw from the way that you handle your illness?
I've said this a number of times. You know, and sort of the decision to move forward and things like that, for which I got both praise and criticism, mostly praise from people who actually had cancer and decided that and believed, as I do, that you can't stop living. A lot of criticism from people who said I should stay home and be with my children because I was going to die shortly and needed to have those years with them. You don't know what the most important lesson. Nobody knows. I mean, I've had children in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and zeros, and I still can't tell you what the best, most important parenting lessons are. But it might be that when bad things happen to you in health or in anything else, that you don't just roll over and take it, that you actually stand up and fight for whatever it is that's important to you. And if that happens, you know, if it's related to the cancer, that's fine. Part of the reason that I was so engaged in the campaign is that this particular issue is enormously important to me, not just for me personally, but for all the people I touched in the system I've seen touched in the campaigns as I've crossed the country. So maybe, I mean, that's the lesson I suppose I hope they get from it. I like to believe it's a more important lesson than, you know, if I had in fact gone to go see Nemo again with them, you know. Yes.
Hi, I'm Shannon Brownlee. I'm a senior fellow at the New America Foundation, and thank you so much, Mrs. Edwards, for sharing your thoughts with us. Political feasibility aside, would you support a single-payer system, Medicare for all?
That's a complicated answer. I mean, I grew up in the military, so I've seen the system actually work. It's clearly a lot more efficient system. I mean, you know, the overhead associated with the private provider and Medicare, you see, but you see a lot more innovation by the private providers than you do by Medicare. So, you know, I'd like to see some of the parts of that more the innovative parts of private. Intervention in the final answer, but I grew up in military hospitals. There weren't huge lines, you know. And, you know, I suppose that the first day when people think, you know, is this going to go away? I suppose the first day there'll be lines, but by, you know, after a while, when people realize this is here forever, there won't be any. I remember hearing a story about a woman when I was campaigning in 2003 or 2004. A woman who was an accountant for a hospital in Massachusetts. And she lived in New Hampshire and had come to one of the events. She said she had previously worked in Vancouver at a hospital about the same size as the one she presently worked in. She worked in the accounting office. She was one of six people who worked in the accounting office in this hospital about the same size as the Massachusetts hospital where she now worked, where there were 600 in the accounting office. 600. So, you know, if we single forms, single treatments, for single ways in which things are treated, I think it's possible to get the same results, some of the same efficiencies that we would associate with a single payer, if we were thoughtful about the way we did a truly universal plan, where, you know, one of the things that someone discussed, death doesn't mean the same thing every place, you know, and there, nobody knows that any more than somebody filing. The differences in the descriptions of things than people who actually do the bookkeeping or the filing of claims with various insurance companies. It's this way in this place and this way in that place, and then they have the changing circumstances. You know, my drug, Zoloda, is no longer approved for this particular use, but everybody uses it, so now there's a change in this. You know, it's all, which is one way in which it's all treated. You know, and that you would create some of those same efficiencies you get in a single payer. I'd hate to lose the innovation part of it. Maybe you could have single payer, but still have maybe some sort of ombudsman who is constantly, you know, provoking the system to improve instead of the stagnation, which is unfortunately a feature of government programs so much. So I know it works. I've seen it work in my own life, a single payer system. So I know it can work. I don't have any of the fears that that are sometimes perpetrated about it, and neither should John McCain, frankly. But I don't wholeheartedly endorse it. Also, part of the problem is the enormous expense. I mean, one of the things that I wanted to see with John's policy, I would have liked to have seen something which Senator McCain is in favor of, which is getting rid of the employer mandate. He wants to get rid of the bias. He calls it the bias against individual and small businesses. What he really wants to do is get rid of the preferences for the, you know, associated with these large employers and their health care plans. Is a very clever way of saying of stating the the problem, but I wanted to get. I'd like to see the employer mandate out. You know, I think it would help us in issues unrelated to health. I think it would help us in issues related to trade and other things like that. When people are talking about benefits, it'd be a lot clearer. It wouldn't be this mishmash where you're trying to figure things out. But it was enormously expensive to do it. It was crippling. The cost was crippling to do it. So I do have that additional hesitation about single payer. Is the possibility of the cost being truly crippling? And I realize what the numbers that Dennis Kucinich was using, some percent, and Carol Mosley Braun used them in 2004, having to do with, you know, some 8% of payroll or something like that, an additional payroll tax associated with it, I think. I have no idea whether that's a reasonable amount to fund the whole thing. So I don't know whether that works. I know that taking the employer mandate was too expensive. So I don't know whether the way people are suggesting it be paid for actually works. Maybe you know the answer to that. I'd be happy to know the answer. Yes.
Chris King, St. Louis American. We have covered you on the front page. And I'll take your commentary on McCain's health care plan if you can tell me how to get it. My question is this.
I write my own stuff. This is it.
Okay. Well, I've got it. You talked a lot about McCain's health care plan. We all know, and you would know as someone who's been close to the U.S. Senate, it's the Congress that would pass these changes ultimately. So I would like you to talk about the problems of a president implementing the health care plan and how much of this is rhetoric on the campaign trail, which they're fairly inoculated from because they know they don't actually have to write or vote for or against the bills that would change how we administer health care.
I'll be honest with you. I have some hesitation about all the candidates in terms of their commitment, real commitment to changes in health care. Was one of the things that John was so adamant about when he was in the race is one of the very first things he talked about as a way of communicating that he thought this was enormously important. One of the very first things he would put his energy, use that, you know, honeymoon period to try to accomplish. I think that part of the problems that are going to exist are that there's going to be enormous backlash against it funded by the same people who don't fund your awards. And the question that was just asked about single payer, you know, had to start with political, you know, realities aside. The political reality is that a healthcare program that actually engages these private insurers is a little less likely to draw their ire and their fire. But I think there is an enormous national will out there, this is not just Democratic voters who came. I mean, I've seen a wide variety of people across political spectrums who are facing this problem in their real life. If you have a healthcare problem, you don't have any other problems. That's your problem, and everybody does at some point. And so you see people who either are in the process or have been in the process. And I think you can get a lot of public engagement. It's going to take a president who does more than just say, I want this, or talk about it in the State of Union address, somebody really fights for it on the floor, somebody who's willing to go out. When you have a recalcitrant senator or a congressman goes out to their district and says to their constituents, he won't give you his policy. He's fine for you to help pay for his policy, but he won't give it to you. You need to put pressure on him or her to vote that way. It takes that kind of commitment. Do I think it can happen? It absolutely, totally can happen, but not honestly without that, because, you know, the same reason that we have this nonsensical prescription drug plan under Part D with this, you know, do not negotiate portion. I mean, that's the pressure they're going to get from the other side. And so you're going to need to, you know, the idea is that those people are going to contribute, and that's going to affect your voters. So go straight to eliminate all those people. Go straight to the voters and make the case there. And I think that there is an enormous national will for it, and I think you could. So I honestly think that it can happen. I think some of the mistakes that can be made, and I've said this to Senator Clinton in the past, you cannot sit there with a stack of paper this high and tell people that I remember her in that a lovely yellow suit sitting there being incredibly articulate about her health care plan, but sitting next to her is a stack of paper this big. It scared the bejeepers out of people. You know, there are atmospherics that you're going to need to control in order to make people not afraid of any kind of a change. But if you're afraid of change, John McCain's the one you should be afraid of in this election. I should be clear about that. Okay, I have time for one more. There are people on both sides. So,
Pat Thomas, University.
I'll try to be quick. You start. Now, I'm going to try to be. I'm so bad at answering questions quickly.
Julius Carriage, Kansas City Star. Do you feel like it's feasible for us to move away from our system of employer-based health coverage?
You think it is?
No, I'm asking you.
It's not economically feasible at this time.
And why not?
It costs $800 billion. If you got it in your pocket, let me know. I was really arguing for it. I really wanted to find a way to do it in the discussions and with policy people in the campaign. And John ultimately made the decision that it just couldn't. We were just not in a position at the present time to do anything remotely like that. Now, maybe if we reduce the costs, then it becomes less expensive, and then we can start talking about it again. But with the cost at the present level, we're talking about $800 billion. It's just entirely too much money. I think that's John Gruber's number. I could be wrong.
Pat Thomas, University of Georgia, to ask you to clarify one of your criticisms of Senator McCain's plans.
Yes.
He wants insurers to be able to do business across state lines. You are drawing a comparison in consumer protections provided by state insurance regulations in North Carolina versus Texas.
Yeah, and I was just, I know Texas is bad, and honestly, we've had pretty aggressive,
Actually, I have a question here.
Yeah.
So, you know, those kind of patchwork quilts of state-by-state regulation have been used to justify a lot of inequities over time.
Absolutely.
As you know, as a Southerner, as do I. But if we had a universal health care plan, wouldn't state-by-state insurance regulations become irrelevant, or would they change, and what would happen
I think
to them and all
this? Well, they ought to change, because if you had a real universal program, I mean, what I'd like to see, in my ideal world, I'd like to see a universal program where you had a certain level of mandated benefits. You had to cover pre-existing conditions. You had to provide certain preventive care and screenings, and you had to cover chronic care and long-term care. And you had a price point at which your bare bones policy that met these minimum standards would be available to people. That would have to be done on a nationwide basis. In order to, that sets that standard. The enforcement of those kinds of things, it seems to me, could be done state by state. You wouldn't have to make the departments of insurance irrelevant to the process. And state by state, you could, whatever the deluxe editions are offered of those same policies, which people could purchase in addition to the basic program, those could also be controlled state by state in terms of. But we need to say this is the minimum care that we consider decent coverage in this country, and that's available, and it doesn't matter in what state you live. Now, I do want to say, on the honesty part, I think that Senator McCain was a proponent of the Patients' Bill of Rights. My husband is a co-sponsor of that bill. There are a lot of questions about whether he was fully supportive of all of the sections and whether if he were drafting a bill, it would look alone. It would look exactly like the bill that he negotiated with Senators Kennedy and with my husband. But that would provide a certain level of federal control in terms of providing some, at least remedies, doctors making the choices as opposed to whether a particular treatment was appropriate or whether a particular treatment was standard as opposed to having an insurance company accountant make that in Hartford, Connecticut. Apologies to everyone from Connecticut. He does approve of some sort of national oversight. But I do think that I agree with you that, to be perfectly honest, you're going to require, if you really want universality, you have to say there's a minimum that nationally, a federal mandated minimum that's required in every state. But there's still a role above that. Thank you all very much for your time and indulgence in me.
Thank you all, and thank you very much to Mrs. Edwards. This has been a wonderful, wonderful presentation.